What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, more pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 20th. Happy Easter to everybody. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball, and we have to talk about Matthew Liberatore, the force in St. Louis. He has entered the Cardinals rotation, and I've followed him a lot throughout the years. I've seen times when he's at 95 with good cutters. Maybe a changeup is working. Maybe the slider is working. But we've seen a different pitcher this year. And now that he's gotten his opportunities inside the rotation, he was at 93. 93 didn't really love him, but he was at 95 and repeated that against the Mets on Saturday. And it was fantastic. 6.2 innings, 200 runs, 6 hits, 1 walk in, 6 strikeouts, and 13 whiffs over 100 pitches. And that slider became all reliable. I love the increased slider usage. We were seeing it under 20% before, and it went up to closer to 30%. And now it's at 40% with pretty even splits against right-handers and left-handers, getting whiffs on that pitch in the back foot as well. 75% strike rate on 40% sliders is so good. That's your foundation. You have these four-seamers at 95 now, which are allowing it to get by a little bit more. There are some decisions here and there about utilizing the sinker and the four-seamer that I don't love, kind of throwing it down the middle in situations, but it's like, no, that's not what you should be throwing. Still, I love to see it. The changeup is coming together. There's more of it against right-handers. Hopefully you can get that one down. But I generally like this approach with Liberatore, especially that focus on the slider and that increased velocity. And I think that this is a get right now. You should go pick him up for that next start against the Brewers. He'll get the Mets again after that. The Cardinals, well, look at their rotation. It's Sonny Gray and Miles Michaelis and Eric Fede and Steven Matz and Andre Pallante and Matthew Liberatore. How does Liberatore not get all these opportunities, right? So he's not going to get removed anytime soon. As long as he's at 95, I think this works out. You roll with it. Garrett Crochet is still having the creased extension. It used to be 7.2 feet of extension. Now it's at 6.7. That's awfully strange and not really what I want to see from him, but we're fine with this, obviously. Like 6 innings of 0 runs, 7 Ks, 6 base runners. Ace is going to ace. Kodai Senga, 5.2 innings at 89 pitches, 0 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. A little annoying to see it because you wanted to go that full 6 innings. Also, 4-seamer usage, 40 thrown here, while he only had about 20% cutter usage, maybe a little bit fewer than that. And I want to see more cutters involved. Actually, I think it was more like 12% cutters. I think he can't really get away with that in the future. We saw a lot of strikes on the forkball, though. 65% strike rate on that as guys just kept chasing it out of the zone and underneath it. Really cool to see it. We also have those other pitches, some sweepers, some sliders, a few curves and sinkers in there, too. But really, it's a 3-pitch mix. We like it right now. It should be better moving forward as well. It's not really a sign that he's going to get worse in the future. So Kodai Senga, we're cool there. Ben Lively, did what he was supposed to do. Okay, he went against the Pirates, 5+ innings, got the win. You love to see it. You don't need to hold on to this, really. Just play by matchup. Luis Severino in Milwaukee got a really low minimalist score. If you don't know what that is, it's something that came up years ago for guys who went deep into a game but did it all via outs in play. So it was 8 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 1 strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? The opposite of the 3 true outcome guy, right? There's just so many balls in play, and most of them were outs. So he has a minimal score of 6. You go from 9, and then you add 1 more per inning, so 8 innings. So it's +1 there. 1 run, that's 2. 3 hits is 5, and then 1 strikeout is 6. I normally never see under 10, so pretty cool to see that just from my own stupid nerdy side. On the other side of it, Severino, I'm happy you worked out. I'm not really doing anything that interesting. It's more that pitching in Milwaukee, get this, guys, is good for pitchers. What? The home run rate is like 6% higher there. It's a 106 park factor for home runs. Well, it's 112 for strikeouts. It's actually the second highest behind only the T, that is Seattle, which is 118. So 18% better for strikeouts across the last 3 years. Kind of interesting, right? It makes a little bit of sense as we think about Milwaukee pitchers. Is somehow it always just kind of works there. And these non-big names are surviving. We're all like, yeah, whatever, those guys. But it kind of adds up, doesn't it? Just a little bit. So keep that in mind with at Milwaukee moving forward, 12% more strikeouts there. But Nick, you only had 1 strikeout in this game, Severino. Well, if you have more strikeouts, you're generally harder to hit. The only reason why the home runs are elevated is because the fences and all. But everything else is heavily depressed. just keep that in mind. You have Casey Mize looking like a proper Toby. 7 innings, 1 run, 4. It's 1 walk, 3 Ks. He got the win. I'm happy he survived, but this was Koufax helping him out, right? BABIP stuff. And only 2 out of 22 CSW on that splitter. He's a splitter. Split change is Chris Paddock. I'll always confuse him. But 77% strike. So it's just a lot of outs, a lot of balls in play on it. So that works. 16 inches of vert, not like 17, 18 on the fastballs at 95, not flirting with 96. A little less extension, under 7 feet. He got called strikes on it against the Royals. I don't love it. By the way, the Royals, if you didn't know this, really, really dampens strikeouts. So it's the other side of it. It's like 12% fewer strikeouts. Okay? Fewer strikeouts there and 12% less, I guess. 12% less, but you get fewer strikeouts. Tangible and integer, it's fewer, guys. If it's a nebulous thing, it's less. Fewer cars, less traffic. We're good. Casey Mize is not really someone actually I think is having that breakout year because I still don't see anything from those secondaries. And I'm not thinking that the splitter and four seamer are just so good that he's like a cheaper or just like a different version of a peak Kevin Gausman. I don't see that. Who's also not doing the thing this year, but that's another story. You have Tywin Walker, who actually won 4 innings of 1 run against the Marlins. That's good. It's interesting how every time he starts, I'm seeing the transaction trends on Yahoo say like, oh, everyone's going after Tywin Walker for the stream. He didn't do well the previous one. And in this one, he's actually doing well. It was 1 hit and 3 walks in 4 innings, but then 2 strikeouts. And he got pulled because apparently his shoulder was stiff. And he was also at 890, 91. Makes sense now. But don't go after Tywin Walker, guys. Stop doing that. If you need a better streamer, just talk to me. I mean, Landon Roop was my guy. Guess what? 7 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts against the win and got the win against the Angels. He went the neckbeard approach that is staying on the edges and underneath without being in the center of the plate or above against right-handers with his curve and sinker. It was really nice. Backdoor and inside with that sinker. And then the curveball was just lying in the bottom. He did well against lefties. He barely faced them, though, so he didn't really see those cutters and changeups. But he killed it. Don't you dare let go of Landon Roop. But he could have streamed him instead. Just saying. Ben Brown also could have been streamed. And I don't want to do this, guys. I get it. He did well against the Dodgers. And look, 6 Ks in 4 innings. 1 run. Yay, he's so good, right? Well, it's against the Snakes. And 7 base runners is why. And 4 walks in there. And here's the thing. Ben Brown had a better four-seamer in this one. 18 inches of vert. We like that. Okay? That's cool. Nearly 2 inches more vert. And he had over 55% strikes on the curveball, which is fine. You kind of want to see over 60%, but I can understand if it's like over 55, you know, they can work together well. But that's really not enough. Like, you need that to be at its absolute peak for Ben Brown to throw 100 pitches and get more than 4 innings. Why did he go 100 pitches despite having that vert and a generally good curve? I mean, not really 55%. You want like 60, 65. It's because he doesn't have a third pitch still. And I keep saying this. I keep yelling it and everyone just doesn't care. That's fine. I will continue to be old man yelling at cloud. All right. But stop going after Ben Brown. It is not worth it. This is not your ceiling play that you might think it is. It's just a capped ceiling because he doesn't have a third pitch and the four-seamer is not ultra dominant. Now, if there are going to be games that the four-seamer is at its peak and the curveball 65 to 70% strikes, and that will be a good one. Nice. Great. But you shouldn't be happy with this start. Okay? This is not enough for you to justify everything. We had an opener for Simeon Woods Richardson. I think this is the first game all year that I've seen an opener and I hate it. 4.1 innings of 3 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. 94 miles per hour, which is good to see. 17 to 18 inches of vert, also good. 9 to 48 whiffs on the heater. Great. Nothing else really. And also, honestly, this was really good command that we normally don't see against left-handers from Simeon Woods Richardson. I don't want to go for this. It was 4.1 innings, 3 runs. 8 base runners, 3 Ks. Just don't go after Simeon Woods Richardson, okay? Paul Skeens, ace is going to ace. Only 4 strikeouts in 7 innings. And 2 over 30 whiffs is not really what you want to see either. He still produced, which is cool, but it's also 11 over 30, 2 over 30 whiffs, sorry, on the splinker with a four seamer on 11% CSW is all just strange. So it's weird. He threw only against left-handers, didn't face a single righty. He threw a lot in the middle of the plate. I'm just saying that Skeens has a 25% K rate right now. And PLV Projections was one of the few projection systems that didn't have him around like a 30% K rate, had him underneath it. And this is why. like not as a 35% strikeout guy. You have Nathan Eovaldi against going six innings, 200 runs, five hits, zero walks, and seven Ks. 11 whiffs, 34% CSW, 90 pitches. It's against the Dodgers. You should be really happy with this. The curve and the splitter were great down. Carter's good for strikes. Good mix across also with his four-seamer as well. I mean, it's really just a good situation that Eovaldi is in at the moment. All right, we are going to jump to Roki Sasaki on the other side of that. And of course, we got to talk about this Mackenzie Gore story. We're going to talk about all of that after this break. Roki Sasaki, six innings, 200 runs, two hits, three walks, and four Ks. This is more of the same. And he got away with this one because the splitter was as good as we've seen, getting more strikes than usual. We did also see the slider show up more than usual, which is great. He's trying it out. It's 81, which is underneath the splitter, so it's kind of harder as a bridge pitch, and also he had a sub-50% strike rate. Also, his four-seamer, it's supposed to be hard, under 95. So it's a good extension, but it's weird to see 94.7 on that. Yeah, I'm not there. I still am selling Roki Sasaki. Chad Patrick had a good game against the Athletics here. Whoa, who is this guy? Six innings, 200 runs, seven hits, zero walks, seven Ks. Well, he pitches for Milwaukee. And guess what? Seven Ks in Milwaukee. Just saying from the thing I said before about Luis Severino. He gets the gold star because he is the most successful, not expected good start here. 10 for 42 whiffs on his cutter, which is in the mid-80s, let's say, where he got it away against righties effectively here. Had some sinkers coming back, playing that game really well against right-handers, saying, is he going to go off the plate or is he going to come back on the plate? That's cool. We don't trust him too for his names, also because it's Chad Patrick. He's not that good. Mackenzie Gore had 28 whiffs and a 42% CSW in Coors. So that's a golden goal for getting the both, of course, the Gallows Pole and the King Cole. But this was the best commanded game I've ever seen Mackenzie Gore have against right-handers. Lefties, it was a little bit like, I overplay a little bit. But my gosh. His four-seamer was just lining the top of the zone absolutely perfectly. And I actually have an image for those who are watching on a live right now. You can see this. As I zoom this out, you can see how absurd the four-seamer is at the top of the zone. And then curveballs and cutters down and into right-handers with changeups down there as well. It is unreal. And it makes all the sense why Gore was as effective as he was. Six innings, 200 runs, four hits, two walks, and 13 strikeouts in Coors. Maybe Gore just belongs in Colorado. And then wouldn't that be cool? We finally found the guy to be the best version of himself. Or maybe the Rockies are just that bad. I don't know. This was awesome to see from Gore. I do not expect it to return. He didn't throw as many sliders to lefties because the curveball was just cooking as much as it was. Ace is going to ace from Michael King. You'll love to see that. Everything is cool. 5.2 innings, 200 runs, four hits, two walks, seven Ks. Hayden Wesneski went against the Padres. Five innings, 200 runs, six hits, one walk, and four strikeouts. I don't love seeing over 50% four-seamers to left-handers from Wesneski. I think there needs to be something else. Otherwise, it's really just sweepers and not much. And I don't like that. I don't want him to be a worse version of Fott. I want him to be doing other things. So I'm not as encouraged, but I think we're just going to keep rolling with this one. Logan Gilbert had a bad first inning. I was watching it live. I was so upset at his pitch selection, throwing these bad pitches over the plate, fastballs when he shouldn't. He adjusted 4.2 innings, a 200 runs, seven hits, two walks, and nine strikeouts, 19 whiffs, 34% CSW, 102 pitches. It's one of those cases where the slider wasn't doing what he wanted it to do. Sub 60% strike rate, felt he had to do this fastball lot. The splitter really did save him, even though it was only 4.2 innings. Chris Sale, I got to mention, 4.1 innings of 200 runs, six hits, three walks, and eight Ks, 98 pitches. He has not gone over five innings once this entire season. He has a 6.13 ERA and a 1.63 whip. Chris Sale, kind of bonkers, right? He hasn't had a single game under 200 runs either. He hasn't had a game over above five. It's consistent of not producing like an ace. So, oh man. I got to bring him down the list tomorrow. I don't want to, but I absolutely need to. 53% strikes on the slider. Seth Lugo is doing Seth Lugo things. There's nothing to report here except that Savant made his curveball slurve now, which I didn't realize they even had the classification for. Fine, whatever. 6.2 innings of 300 runs, 7 base runners, 5 Ks. That's all fine. Poor quality start for Jose Berríos. 6 innings, 300 runs, 8 base runners, 3 Ks. Yeah, you don't want this if you're not in a quality star league, because that is Jose Berríos. Stop rostering him in 12-teamers. Okay, Kyle Hendricks went against the Giants. We were hoping to get a good stream out of this. We were close for a quality start. Five innings, 300 runs, four hits, two walks, and one strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? Only 63 pitches. I'm actually curious why they went with Detmers after, but fine. So it goes. Shane Smith, this is kind of cool. He went against the Red Sox in Fenway. 4.2 innings, 300 runs, four hits, one walk, three Ks. Not an impressive line, but you can imagine that he'd go deeper into games in the future. 73 pitches. And we finally saw 96 on average, 96, 97, instead of like 95 or so, because he was pumping it at like 98, 99 early, and then it fell down to like 95 later on. But with every game, I think we're going to continue seeing better stamina from Shane Smith, that he can actually go 85, 90 pitches and hopefully be holding 96 mile per hour velocity by the end of it. So he does get the Twins and Brewers next. You might want to push it there. But at the very least, right now, we're okay. You know, we understand the progression with Shane Smith, and he hasn't been a must-add yet. I think we can wait a little bit longer. But we might start seeing it as soon as next outing, because it is the Twins. You might as well just try that. Brandon Young against the Reds. I watched this. He's not special. I'm so sorry. He has a really big, massive two-plane curveball, but the fastball is not that good. This changeup isn't. And it's like, he needs to be perfect with his precision to make this work. Brandon Young isn't doing that. I'm so sorry. Orioles fans, you need something. It's not this guy. Four innings, 300 runs, seven hits, three walks, three Ks in his MLB debut. We'll see if we get something more from another start. We never start guys in our MLB debut. It's always a little bit different. So we'll see what happens. Carlos Carrasco tried his best. Four innings, 400 runs. Yeah. Don't go with Carrasco unless you're desperate for a win. And hopefully he can go five and get it in the future. Shane Baz, 3.1 innings to 500 runs, four hits, four walks, and three Ks. Disappointing, as the curve and four seam were not as consistent as we've seen, and the changeup became a little bit easier because of that. Honestly, it's just one of those days. His velocity was down, but only really because he was laboring. 83 pitches without getting out of the fourth, and he was coming out firing early on. Hunter Green, three innings, 500 runs, six hits, two walks, four Ks. He got bamboozled by the Orioles. Nothing really massively different here. He threw fewer sliders for strikes. So not 70%+, but like 60, 61, which is okay. They honestly just attacked those high fastballs. They went there with a mission. And yeah, Green didn't have his greatest stuff. And so it goes. It's fine. Zach Gallen, though, six innings, 600 runs, nine base runners, five Ks. Oh boy. This was against the Cubs, so that's fair. Changeup is at 47% strikes. His curveball was at 43%. And when you have your premier pitch at a 43% strike rate, things are going to be bad. That means it's sliders and four seamers for Gallen to get his outs. And that's generally not going to work because those are not as good pitches. So Gallen has really struggled as of now. I understand dropping him in a 10-teamer. I mean, 10-teamers, you have so many options. You can stream very effectively. You don't need to hold on for someone like Gallen. Well, in a 12-teamer, I'm a little... It's tough because I feel like, oh man, if you were aggressive on this early, you wouldn't be going through this. You probably could find something off of the wire. At the same time, I do think at some point Gallen's going to figure things out and make adjustments. He's too much of a vet to let him have this struggle last throughout the entire year. So we'll see how this goes. It's up to you in a 12-teamer. You know, sometimes you have to make that tough drop, and he's in hipster territory now. We don't know what to do. You're in purgatory. So good luck figuring it out. Just because he has been bad doesn't mean he will continue to be bad, but it could mean that this is just a really bad season for Zach Gallen. Chase DeLander against the Nationals, four innings of 600 runs. Don't roster Chase. Coors is undefeated. Just don't do this. And Cal Quantrill against the Phillies. I mean, come on. We did not expect this to work whatsoever. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for listening. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.